Oh, it's the first episode of the ManCast!
ManCast, baby!
ManCast, we got Crystal Wolf in the house. We got Eric Lorden from Passports. And we got my boy Craig Kimberly tracking down a crime scene today.
Chasing down crime today, baby.
That's what you do.
I chase crime, man.
You're a crime chaser.
If I ain't causing it, I'm
chasing it. So why don't you explain, like today, the video, exclusive video.
Exclusive, by the way.
Like, but you went through great lengths and put yourself in harm's way.
I really did, actually. So I'm coming down Washington. The train had just stopped. I see a couple guys run across a train track, and I'm thinking, like, what are these idiots doing? I'm like, and what's up with this guy? He doesn't look like he should be jumping across. Oh, a little portly, realized it was a cop. So I'm like, all right, well, he's chasing this guy in the
red
jacket.
Was he keeping up with the suspect?
No, he was not. He was not.
Okay. He used $150,000 weight room in Rockport.
Yeah. He wasn't keeping up with him too well, and they chased this dude into the ditch area behind the Mac. I mean, there was dogs.
The swamp. It's like a swamp.
Swamp. It was guns drawn. They were running after this dude. I don't know what he did and where he was coming from, obviously. But
if it came from all the way from the train tracks over through, by through where?
Right at the train station.
The train? Oh, like yeah. The downtown train station?
The train is like stopping right at the road.
Yep.
Two people are running across the tracks. I see, okay, this situation here. I pull out of the lane. I'm heading towards downtown. I go in the opposite lane, turn into the mat to chase down.
Oh, you go back door. You back door.
I back doored it. And they run in front of me. I pull over, park. I get out, iPhone in hand, you know, run over there. And all of a sudden, other cops are pulling up. Unmarked vehicles are pulling up. People are coming out of everywhere. There's dogs. Hear lots of, like, it sounds like Jurassic Park type shit going on. There's like crunching of limbs and leaves and people yelling and dogs are barking.
There's like reeds back there, right?
Is that all kinds
of stuff. You do by the old Maplewood.
Right behind the back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, well, this is just
Willowwood Gardens or whatever you want to call it.
I mean, this is literally
where the glass company is.
Behind John Harvey's glass place.
Yeah.
Okay. Back up in there. Next to the car wash, all that jazz. Lots of commotion. Then I hear, like, oh, he's over by Willwood or whatever. I'm like, oh, snap. Okay. I hop back in my car, you know, and I start chasing after him and stuff. They're just trying to, you know, get the
renegade,
scoop.
Renegade reporter.
Get the scoop, man, because, you know, the journalist in me. And
you spoke about the cop's size. What about the suspect?
The suspect, well, he was slightly sprightlier. He was a little bit more spelt. He was 50.
So he had an edge.
He probably had an edge, and he really shouldn't have had an edge on, you know, anyone that should be chasing.
Like somebody. A 20-yard edge?
Yeah. Like when they hit the tracks, they were both on the tracks, but he opened up the gap, and it became, you know, it was a boat race at that point.
That's not right.
And somehow he got through them weeds like he owned that. Obviously, he camps out down there or something because he knew how to get through
there. He knew the way.
He got through there, and then I hear he's gotten all the way through it to the other side behind Harvey's. And boom, he's back up in the hood back there. So I pull out, start chasing, whatever, work my way around, seeing the action. So when I finally see them, I pull over, get out, walk up the situation, and dude's on the ground. They're cuffing him up, knee in his back, the whole, you know, cops episode, Miami type shit. And
Cleveland, more like.
Yeah, straight up. And then they, you know, he's yelling.
Detroit.
And I asked the kid, I'm like, you know, I'm like, so what'd you see? And this kid said, yeah, man, the cops come running up, guns drawn on this guy. And I was like, well, that's what I saw. And some other cop showed up, he said, and I don't know if it was a street clothes cop or uniform, and just straight bulldogged him, just straight tackled him, you know.
He trucked him?
Trucked him, right. clotheslined him right to the ground. And
to Brickenshaw Jackson.
It wasn't my redneck buddy, like 6'2", 300.
No.
Did he leave his feet?
Oh yeah, I think he definitely left his feet. The way this kid described the altercation was a straight up beat down.
Was there any hopping of fences?
Oh, he must have hopped something at some point.
You know what I love? The best part about the video was like the oh, I don't. Maybe I shouldn't. No disparaging things. The nice. Very
one of the locals.
Elegant, the elegant lady
who
in the pink shirt
right
who flipped a butt into the street.
Right behind the ambulance. Like, don't give like a
full
shit.
Frame, right in the middle of the frame. Donna Artizoni, like, probably going to lose her mind.
Yeah,
like,
she just flipped that. A butt right there.
Didn't
she,
care.
I also asked her what street we're on. She didn't know, which classy. I found fascinating because she obviously was on foot and lived very nearby. And so then they get him up. They go through his stuff. He's screaming and yelling. They slap him on a stretcher. For some reason, he had to leave in an ambulance instead of in a cop car. I don't know.
Yeah.
Could have been from the initial sack and strip six that happened.
Yeah.
But he was cussing all the way to the ambulance as they were stuffing him in. He had a little tissue.
It was literally one of those episodes of Cops.
It was so funny.
Detroit or
it was. It was beautiful, right. Man. So anyways.
Was he Caucasian?
Yes, he was a Caucasian male in his late 50s to early 60s, some white hair.
Well, that's good.
And a local tongue on him, I should say.
Yes.
So he was speaking a local dialect there.
So you said they had their guns drawn?
Well, yes, there was a couple, but, you know, don't know if he had a knife in his hand, don't know if he did, you know what I'm saying, we don't know the scenario.
He was cussing up a storm, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, he was, it was a situation.
I gotta say
that. They handled it, though. Like, no one got hurt.
Who, like, would you want to ever be a policeman? I mean, that's gonna be, like, a horrible job, having to respond to domestics and deal with the scourge of the earth.
Straight up.
I couldn't do it.
They don't make, know. It's not the worst thing. I mean,
couldn't do it.
Really?
I don't know.
Not the worst, not the best. I mean,
you think about that kind of thing, but being a police officer is about helping people, and that's really why people go into that. They don't. Yeah. I get all the silly things most that happen and all that that goes on with it, but I don't know. I mean, I guess you might want.
Oh no, I understand. I have the police and fire utmost respect for all those dudes,
especially in our town. I mean, they're 10, man. They're, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, we're not living in D.C. or Baltimore.
Right.
I mean, exactly have to. You know, shut down a gunfight every night or a gang warfare or something.
Like, if they let me drive one of those Hummers around, I'd consider it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, like four wheeling, like trying to chase down people that don't have fishing licenses and stuff like that. Yeah, I'd be up for that.
Yeah, if there was like a police Ferrari I could drive, I would be your guy.
This is high speed, Craig.
Exactly, I would be your guy. So it was another action packed Gloucester foot race.
Very nice.
My buddy was a cop in Milton, and it was so boring down there that he'd be half asleep in the cruiser, and the office would go, you know, hey, you know, whatever, car 7, you know, check in. And you go, yep, 10-4. And you go, stand by to stand by. And he'd be like, okay. You know, 10-4, I'm going to stand by to stand by. That was what he's going to do, you know, because they had to wake him up like every 45 minutes.
Oh, stand by to stand by.
So that he can stand by to stand by.
Yeah, much respect.
He now sells tools for like Snap-on tools or something like that.
So we just had, this is the man cast, and we just had steaks, we had some T-bones, and we had
baked potatoes.
No veggie.
That's
how you do it, right?
That was straight up.
Yeah. No green on the plate.
There was no green on the plate. There was no.
So rate my steak.
That was definitely a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, it wasn't a 10. I would not say
it was a 9.
So what did you say? 8.5. Where you go?
Me?
It was.
That's a supermarket steak. I'm gonna give it an 8.
That's what I agree. I was gonna say 8.
I'd go 8 too. I mean, it was not a supermarket steak. Right, for a supermarket steak. You're right.
I thought you cooked it as best as it could have been cooked.
Yes.
Right.
Mine was perfect.
Your execution was a 10.
And it was rare on the bone.
I give that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Did you all pick your bones up and gnaw them?
I watched you do it.
I'm in the wrong crowd.
I didn't know. Well, we were trying to get to the podcast. Otherwise,
we were
hurrying.
So I cooked that on a gas grill. I bought the gas grill 2 years ago, and it's falling apart right now.
Oh, you take amazing care of your grills.
I scraped down my grills. I scraped down my grills and I cover it.
Remember the one you left at my house? Remember that one?
Looked like a stolen Volkswagen.
The $1,000 grill.
For $1,000, this is an example. That was covered, and that was scraped down every time.
No, we're not talking about just scraping down the grates.
You got to like do the whole thing, right? Spray.
I mean, when you take a shower, you don't just like wash your face.
Well, what do you do?
Well, I mean, you gotta like clean up the
disassemble.
Shit that's in there.
You have to disassemble.
Like, put a cover on it. Like, was that thing open to the snow all winter?
No, it's covered. It's completely. I have a grill cover.
You don't think overcleaning it is too much sometimes though?
Like, no, you need a combination of degreaser, and oil and tinfoil. And that'll help maintain.
Well, how often? Well, like after every time you use it?
Listen, you have to, Craig, you explain.
Okay. I'm asking.
Okay.
The grill master, Craig Kimberly, we consider the guru out of the group. Okay. Let's hear what he has to say.
So I
proper
bought,
grill maintenance.
I bought the same grill a day after you told me about that special with Seekers.
Yeah, a year after I got it. Yeah.
No, the same year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I got it like the same week. I went like 2 days later.
It was a great deal.
It was a screaming deal. And you know me, you know, I'm a charcoal guy, I'm a wood guy, I'm a smoker guy. I also believe in a gas grill. I think you'd also own a gas grill. Because when you're cooking for two and you got, 20 minutes, I want to eat a meal. You, everyone should have one, I think.
I disagree.
So, anyways, we'll get to your disagreement. So, I've done amazing things with gas grills. I've smoked ribs on gas grills. But if you look at the condition of mine today and the condition of yours today, it would look as though there's a 3 to 4 years difference in the use.
All right, so tell me what I'm supposed to do.
Well, like starting on the outside, like I use a really good cleaner, stainless steel cleaner, restaurant grade, and a sponge to polish that thing like a fucking Cadillac. Like,
see, big, I thought, like, you know, I my keep, dad and me,
I
we
keep
have
the exterior perfect.
My dad cleans it so much, I feel like he cleaned it too much.
Well, maybe
that's my question. That's what I'm trying to find the right
so
way.
So anyways, I try to keep, you know, a couple times a year.
You're talking about the outside.
Inside. So inside, you know, I'll clean my grills. I'll scrape them thoroughly while the grill's still hot. After you cook, you always clean the hell out of your grill.
Absolutely, yeah.
And if you can, you flip the grates over, give them another extra scrape on the bottom, get some of the residual out. Uh-huh. Then you got to remove the grates, remove the plates on top of your burners, clean those off. Then you got to clean the entire inside, because this is where fires happen, by the way. Fires happen underneath gas grills because of all the shit, butter and oil and things that people put on. That cakes up down there, and that when you get a flame up, that whole entire grill will catch on fire. It's very dangerous. Yes. So I put aluminum foil, heavy-duty foil down inside, but still cut holes for it to drain into the drainage capturer mechanism. But you need to pull out that foil and replace it every couple times. And what you're doing is you're keeping the bottom from getting all that shit caked onto it, which causes the whole thing to rust out.
Right.
You know, so you didn't tell me before
that the aluminum foil caught fire?
It can't. Well, that was because of the shit I put on it. It was because I put a good friend's steak tip recipe with has a lot of olive oil in it. Jamie at the Stone's Pub. <Stone's Pub. laughs> No names, Jamie at Stone's Pub. But his recipe. But man, you slap one of them things up there and you're going to have some flames. You really have to be careful. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if all that builds up, then the foil itself will catch, just like as though there was no foil down there. Mm. So after a steak tips that have been marinated with a lot of olive oil or butter, whatever, you need to pull that foil every time. But that's grill longevity for gas grills. Inherently now they're built like shit. They're supposed to rot out in about a year or two, so you can come back and just buy a new one from Lowe's. I mean, that's their intention.
Well, here's the thing. Like, so I've been this... I bought my first... Big time, when I bought my first house, the big purchase was $1,000 stainless steel, Mac Daddy grills. I was all excited. I got it. And literally 3.5-4 years later,
P.S.
The burners like had to be replaced. And to go get them replaced, it was like $250. It was like all these like parts that were like, I still had I ended up with like a crappy grill that needed like
$500.
$500. It was right at the point where this isn't worth fixing. And I swore off ever buying another expensive grill ever. Okay. So now fast forward to today. Well, two years ago, me and you both bought this grill at Sears. It was a $500 grill. It was on sale for like $250.
Yeah, it was stupid.
It was like, okay, if I get 3 years out of this, I consider it a victory because, you know, people are buying $800 grills today, and I don't want to do
and
that.
And it's every bit as good as an $800 grill.
What about the $4,000 egg?
So, wait, we're going to get to that too.
Right.
But what I wanted to get to right now was this guy that I know. He's from Springfield, Mass, and he stays at Cape Ann Campsite. He comes all the time. He brings Frank and I coffee, and we shoot the shit all the time. He is the cheapest. And when I say cheapest, he's not in a bad way cheap. He's frugal. But he's one of the most frugal guys.
So you got more money to go on trips.
So he has, right, exactly. No, not disparaging. He's one of the most frugal guys ever. He swears... We had the dramatic pause right there.
That was a dramatic pause. A little pour.
Sorry, pause for the cause.
That's how they call it, the man cast.
There we go.
So he's, this guy's the most frugal guy in the world, and he swears, he himself buys Weber grills, and he says that he gets over 10 years out of a Weber grill, and it's well worth it. And now, you have to understand, this is the kind of guy that drives the, you know, bare basic vehicle, bare basic everything, but when it comes to the grill, he says that Weber's are worth it. Now, have you heard anything about Weber's grill? Do you think that they're really, like, because they're way more expensive. It's like $650 for a low-end Weber grill.
Oh, you're talking Weber gas.
Weber gas.
Yeah. Or even the charcoal ones aren't cheap.
Yeah. $99. $99 for the one you got, right?
For charcoal.
Yeah.
Charcoal. But we're talking, I'm talking about gas. So do you think it's worth it? Or do you prescribe, where do you fall? Do you prescribe to the, I'm buying a $250 grill and know that I'm gonna have to replace this every 4 years? Do you buy a Weber for $650 and say, this thing is gonna last me a while, so I'm gonna take care of it and everything else? Or we're gonna start with Chris DeWolf. Where do you fall on this?
I'm looking for a good grill. I don't care what the name is, based on what I've done in the past, what I've had. I bought like one of those charcoal grills on sale at Bed Bath & Beyond.
So do you a charcoal guy?
So wait a second. Nobody, no man buys a grill at any place with the word bed.
I don't remember what it was called. It was on sale. It was dirt cheap.
But it was you're a charcoal guy. Or you guess.
Grill, it was made by charcoal.
Oh, charbroil.
Charbroil.
Okay.
I bought it for like, it was a $800 grill, $300.
Yeah.
So it was stainless steel. So I was like, yeah, I'll take it.
How long have you had it?
It lasted me like 6 years, and then I finally crapped the bed after 6 years.
6 years.
So you know, we took care of it, we cleaned it, and then the next grill I got with my father, I forget what the name is. It's not Weber, but we went to Lowe's, checked it out. It's got a smoker in the bottom of it. My dad cleans it all the time, and it works good for us. It's a gas grill. We have big parties at the pool all the time.
Still cooking.
Yeah, and still cooking. You know, so I guess I'm not buying the name. I'm buying, I guess, the looks and what features. It offers and features. And
what features are you looking for? What features are you looking for?
I wanted the smoker, even though it's nothing like what you guys do. But we have a little smoke in the bottom, so I can smoke the ribs on the bottom, put the wood chips in on the bottom of it, and it works.
There you go.
So I kind of was looking for that, and then a little saute section on the side of it. So I like to do that, cook onions, peppers, or whatever.
Corn boiler.
Yeah, right.
So Eric bought one of Smoke and Jim's smokers, the custom, big industrial monstrous smokers. You also have a Weber.
That was given to me.
Charcoal.
Right.
Old school.
And do you have a gas or do you not own any gas?
I won't buy gas anymore.
Okay, go ahead. Now let's hear.
All right, so Toby Pat bought me a chimney, right, for $23.
Which, by the way,
$23.
People, anyone that cooks with charcoal, if you don't have a chimney,
just go get it.
Failing at life.
Yeah. Right. So if you take two pieces of newspaper and fill it full of charcoal and wait 15 minutes, then say 20 minutes, you dump it in the grill.
No fluid, by the way.
That's all the charcoal you need for two people.
Okay.
One chimney full. And because it's like an updraft system, it turns all this charcoal white, you know, because it's burning from the bottom, so that when you dump it up.
So wait, where do you start out with the charcoal? On your pavement or in the grill?
Well, anywhere safe.
Anywhere
you get.
It's not inside of the grill at this point.
No. It's okay. Anywhere.
You can set it on top of the grill.
You could put it on concrete on the street.
You put it on top of the grill.
Yeah, you can put it on top of the grill.
Okay.
I wouldn't put it on the grates because you don't want to go forward.
That's fine. So two pieces of newspaper, right? Full thing of charcoal, usually lump, not Kingsford briquettes.
Nothing with fuel in it.
Chemical shit. Yeah. You know, no match light or whatever. You know, 20 minutes later, you dump it in. You know, and most of the people, honestly, that use gas grills, they burn them off for 20 minutes. So the fact that that people say that, you know, your gas grill is so much faster than your charcoal grill,
You're talking really at the end of the day, maybe 10 minutes.
Yeah, because I go like 7 minutes. I go like 7 minutes. I get mine up to temperature. Like I want it over 500, yeah. Like between 500 and 700.
I wait 10-15 minutes before I even start cooking. I turn it on, I go do my stuff, and I come back.
You just wanted to cook off too.
Right. So we're about the same amount of time if you use a chimney. Right, people that used to like fill up their Weber charcoal
with
grills,
a big pile,
and it would take like an hour for it to
lighter
burn.
Fluid or whatever. What was the crap they always used to squeeze? Oh, yeah. Squeeze a half of
Oh my god!
I had one by golf once. Yeah. I think it was.
You can't use lighter fluid in your burger. That's all you do is use lighter fluid when you eat your burger.
But I started using that wicked good Maine charcoal. From Foster's, which is just logs.
Just wood charcoal.
You buy that
cowboy charcoal.
Well, you can buy that at Foster's, but then now the Restaurant Depot has the cowboy charcoal for $10 a bag. Wow. Huge bags for $10.
Yeah.
You know, at a grill store, it's $23 or whatever. Yeah. So, but I mean, I get the deal because, you know, they have pallets and pallets of it.
Right.
All right, so one, charcoal tastes better than gas. Anybody going to argue?
No.
No.
All right. So if you had your druthers, you'd always cook on charcoal.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, at a point in my life, I get tired of like having my Weber like real hot on one side, one burner not working. Then I took it off. It was like $170 to rebuild the
first. Oh, you had a Weber.
Well, I had a Weber gas.
Oh, okay.
I've had many gas grills.
So wait, do you consider the Webers to be worth the extra expense?
No.
Okay. Good. Wow, I have two conflicting things.
Yeah. Because I don't think that anyone's going to maintain them like Craig. So I'll give you a very quick synopsis. Right, the stuff that sits down in the bottom of your grill that you don't like clean out all the time.
Yeah, the gristle.
Right, it gets humidified by dew and humidity, and it gets wet, and that's what rusts out your grill. Right. The other thing is that when you stop using your grill in December and you're not going to use it for 4 more months, spray it down with WD.
WD though, that's gonna get in your food though, isn't
no,
it?
Then you just then it dissipates over the course of the winter, right? And then you burn it off. I'm not talking about a gallon jug of WD. I'm just talking about a spray and a wipe. You know, so you wipe
at that point in the fall, like the. I'm not thinking about my grill.
Nobody asks you. You know,
first of all, this is where you're failing in life.
There is no
off season to grilling. Unless you stop being a man in fucking December.
I did the briskets. It was freaking 10 degrees.
Hey, I cooked. That's true. I did for the Super Bowl. I was out there 20 degrees with 20-mile-an-hour winds.
None of you
smoking motherfuckers.
None of you.
I broke my toe.
None of you motherfuckers were digging your grill out from underneath the snowpack.
I have the proof.
10 degrees I made brisket.
I have the proof. Yes.
I have pictures.
It was 8 feet of snow.
I got pictures.
I have the proof.
Dude, what did you dig out first? Your car or your grill? What did you dig out first?
Always the car first. Because I got to go get some shit for my grill.
Well, my neighbor has to
There was 3 feet of snow on the porch when I did this stuff for the Super Bowl. All right, so your question about the Weber. Now, Webers, especially the really nice ones, they are beautiful machines. I mean, they are. The quality built into them things is ridiculous. You go grab a Weber and you open up that lid, you check out those grates, you see how it's constructed. It is a Cadillac compared to a Yugo to most of these, you know, cheap gas grills like we get from Sears or whatever. But like Eric said, if you don't keep track of it, you don't keep it up as though it is a Ferrari, it's gonna fall to shit just like any piece of crap grill. So why go spend $1,000 if you don't maintain it like you would a nice boat? When you know, if you want a Bayliner, go drive around in a Bayliner. You want a Chris Craft made out of handmade wood, and you take care of the boat differently.
Mike Tupper told me when I first got my Grady White, he goes, take the engine cover off every year and spray the absolute crap out of that thing with WD.
Look at this.
Can we just say
can we just what you can't see?
Can we just say what just happened?
Service.
Can we just talk about what just happened?
Thank you, Caleb.
The sexiest woman on the planet just.
Yep, there we go.
Look at that. Unannounced. Oh, I got another beer.
Obviously, they must need more beer.
Should we feel bad about our opening track now? That's just...
Wow.
Do you haul lobster pots and clean fish, too?
That's a beautiful
really?
Thing.
No cleaning fish. Haul lobster pots.
I love that. So, anyways, Weber's... if you got the money and you're that kind of guy that wants to drop, you know, $1,500 because it makes you feel better, you think you grill better, go right ahead. Your food ain't going to taste no damn different if you don't know what you're doing.
True. It wasn't about tasting better. To me, it was like, are they going to last? Like, because these guys are like, oh, they're definitely going to last you 10
years.
They do.
People that I know have had, I've never bought a Weber. Yeah. I've never wanted to spend that money, but I've known people that have had them, and I've known people that had them for like 6 to 8, 10 years.
Yeah.
See, and they keep them covered.
See,
and they
six to eight
them.
Is not worth it, though, because if you buy ours for $250 and you get three years out of it, and theirs are $800 and they only get 6 years out of it, you're better off getting
on the $250.
Honestly, $250, also, right? That's what I'm at right now. Is too, on the better grill you buy, you're going to get a better grate. And that's really 50% of your grill is the burners and the grate. Is it iron? Is it, you know, is it stainless? Is it thick? Is it cheap?
It's funny that you just mentioned that, because I always thought stainless grates were the best because they're definitely the easiest to clean. But I was watching some YouTube videos grilling. I'm obsessed with grilling like right now, videos and stuff on YouTube. They were saying that you actually don't want stainless. You want cast iron.
Yeah, cast iron, heavy, and you'll see with the more expensive ones.
Or is your skillet?
And the other thing about the cast iron grills is the nicer ones, if you look at them, the grill is fluted. So there's a channel in it, and that's going to hold extra moisture. It's going to hold extra flavor. It's going to do extra things, and it's going to channel fat away when it wants to. So there's a lot of tech going into the nicer ones.
Yeah.
But, man, the iron... You can't beat it, man. I mean, it's stainless looks pretty. It looks pretty for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it does. You're
and
right.
Stainless has a weird construction compared to some of the iron ones. They're not
flimsy though. They see. Okay, so we're gonna go to the next level. The green egg.
Getting into smokers now.
No. But I mean, you can grill on that too.
Yeah, I don't know anyone that grills on a green egg.
What?
I've never known anyone to grill on one.
If you put charcoal on the bottom, it doesn't grill.
No, you can. I just don't know everyone is. I've never seen anyone use one as a grill. Only people use them as smokers.
I use my smoker as a grill. Yeah. Sometimes.
Oh, I do too.
We got a lot of people.
I'll dump coals in the bottom of it. Green egg, what? Is it worth it?
Well, that.
The regular one's $900, right?
Yeah, you're dropping a G.
$850.
Yeah, and then they have all the accessories.
Yeah, the caddy it sits on is another $350. The wheels.
See, the thing to me about the green egg that is intriguing to me, and I don't know much about it. Never cooked on, so I can't speak to that. But the grills that me and you bought for $250, there's like all these like air pockets. Like there's like open gaps, like 1-inch gaps where air is getting in and getting out. And the green egg is like literally
airtight,
like an inch and a half of ceramic. Like it weighs 300 pounds, whatever it is. You're not having any heat loss.
Yeah, it's got a gasket and everything. I mean, they lock and shut.
Yeah.
They're meant to be airtight.
I mean, is there
smokers.
Something to that?
Yeah.
I mean, they use minimal amounts of chips to smoke.
Right, so just you insulated.
Yeah, you could walk away from it for hours. You could use a handful. You could use 1/50th what I use on a Saturday when we're smoking.
You guys actually know anyone who's got one?
No.
Other than the people at Foster's, no.
No, I mean someone who uses it. No. Toby Pett's friend in Bethel has one.
And what does he say?
He says, I'm pretty sure they've done briskets and turkeys.
Yeah.
And he says they're unbelievable.
It's very sad,
if it's expensive, it has to be unbelievable.
Yeah. I don't think so. Not when it comes to food. Toby's pretty
straight.
He's pretty
good. That's true. No, he is. Yeah.
Toby's pretty straight shooter when it comes to food.
That's true.
And of course, he has a buddy that has one. You'd have to have a buddy that's got one of them things. So,
yeah.
I mean, he knows what he's talking about, but. They are a set and forget it. I mean, not that you don't, you know.
Personally, I don't know anyone who has one.
But I got a neighbor that's got one, but I don't know the guy too well, you know.
Yeah.
I've seen him at a lot of barbecue places.
I've covered
barbecue contests and talked to people that have had them. I've seen a lot of tournaments on TV, been to a lot of them from Florida to Virginia. And you know.
What intrigues me about them is not necessarily that they're like they're smokers or anything else. What intrigues me is that it's cement that is not going to fall apart.
Yeah,
not rock.
Concrete, yeah.
Right, you know what I mean? That's like the kind of thing like...
Their construction is phenomenal.
What is it? Cement is covered with ceramic, right?
Well, whatever. I think it's ceramic.
It's ceramic.
Or whatever it is.
Probably clay.
Like a pizza oven.
Yeah,
basically. I mean, it is within itself an insulator, so it's baking. It's holding. I mean, the reason why good smokers are effective is the thick of the steel, the metal, and they hold a lot of heat. You know, and what that green egg does amazingly is traps, like you said, a ton of heat. It contains a lot of heat, so it's a very efficient, like a tandoori oven,
yeah,
or like, you know, like in New Mexico, like a kiva, or whatever. Like, its design is ancient in a sense that it holds a lot of heat. It does really good. You
well, know? It doesn't let any cold air.
Yeah, in. It's very yeah. efficient.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. The eyes, like on the bottom, I got gaps.
Now, I've stuffed tinfoil in every section of a gas grill in order to smoke.
I was going to do that just to retain more heat, but you told me that you had a problem with it lighting on fire one time.
That's the foil at the bottom.
Yeah, after the steak tips. Four or six years.
Yeah. That happened to us.
After marinated steak tips, you got to replace the foil at the bottom. I learned that one.
That grill I bought, the Charbroil grill that I had for 6 years, last year I had it caught on fire when Alicia was cooking on it, which was great because she's afraid of fire. But anyway, because I wasn't cleaning that last year. So I'm in the front of my parents' house. All of a sudden, I hear Alicia screaming in the background, "Grass, grass!" I go out, the grill's on fire. It's black all over the place. It was priceless.
Think about it like this. If your cooktop in your kitchen, your gas stove, and a lot of people had indoor grills and stuff on their stoves. But if you just, your indoor stove was just a grill, just a cooktop. But there was a bottom to it, obviously. And you cooked a bunch of steaks and burgers for 10, 12 people.
You'd clean it.
You'd be like, oh, I clean the crap out of this. Yeah, when it's sitting outside, you throw the top on it, forget about it.
That's true.
So the next time you go out there and it looks like crap.
I think the thing of it is when you after know. Once it's done, it's time to eat.
You're thinking about going out there.
No, you're like, getting that. Here's a rule.
Here's a rule that Eric will attest to. I mean, if you're doing burgers and dogs, not such a big deal. But if you're doing steaks, you're doing big pieces of meat, you're doing, you know, lots of other stuff. Really, you need to pull those things off and let them sit 5 to 10 minutes, if not longer. Always use that time to leave the flame on, cook your grill.
Right.
I mean, clean your grill. Let it stay hot, bring the meats in, or leave them out there and don't tell anyone to touch them, and that's when you clean your grill. Right. And then you shut it off. By the time you're done cleaning it, the meat's rested.
It's so, part of the process.
Yeah, exactly. You got to make it part of the process.
Chris, when you were at Mammy's Kitchen, when you were cooking, on, did you use cast iron at all? Or did you use non-stick pans? At the
restaurant, we didn't use cast iron.
What did you use? Stainless steel?
Pans we use for the eggs and stuff like that? I don't even know. I think it might have been stainless steel.
Stainless steel. Do you use cast iron at the restaurant, Eric?
I have it. We use it on occasions for specials. You know, it's hard to do any amount of volume on cast irons. I have worked for a guy that had a stack of 9 cast irons up in Maine. That place sat like 250. Called Joseph's. I learned a ton from that guy. And it was a lot of work.
It was a lot of work.
And we do like 400 for dinner on a Saturday night, and I might do 50 steak au poivres.
Yeah.
You know, he sold some honking steaks, man. They're like 14 ounce Angus friggin' steak au poivres.
That's a lot of work.
Wow. Do you use cast iron on your outdoor grills at all?
I do.
As far
you
as...
do?
You mean the grills or using a pan?
Well, I use it on a pan.
Like a cast iron pan.
Oh, yeah, throw it right on top of the grill. Yeah, for sure.
I got double cast irons inside, always.
Yeah.
In my house.
I have double cast iron pans.
Oh, really?
I always have.
And what do you generally use it for? Steaks? Do you cook steaks in there?
I cook everything in there.
It's great. It's the best thing.
You can say onion. The only thing I know is doing
steaks,
eggs.
Put it in. Yeah, it's...
Yeah, eggs tend to be a bitch.
Eggs are a bitch.
Yeah.
You just gotta have it super thick. Yeah,
for $20, I've had one of my pans for like 20 years.
Yeah,
and the thing's like, it'll outlive me.
It's indestructible.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You wash it, whatever. You know, Craig never put soap in his. Every now and then I'll soap mine if I really messed it up. You know, but normally like today I did tenderloin tips in it last night, and you know, let it soak for a little bit. Just gave it a quick scrub with hot water, dumped the oil in it, rubbed the whole thing down inside and out.
What kind of oil?
Normally I just use salad oil because I don't saute or sear in olive oil because it's got a high flash point.
Yeah, it does.
Lower flash point.
Olive oils.
So yeah. Smoke.
And the scrubbing, you know, cleaning, there's like a wives' tale basically about don't use soap and cast iron.
Yeah.
And I kind of sort of live by that. Then I did a little bit of research on it after talking with you about it. And basically, if you got a good seasoned pan, like he has, it's got years of use on it, a little bit of soap ain't going to do a damn thing.
Yeah, right?
If it's taken care of, not a problem at all. Not a problem at all. Yeah. So it actually works well.
Chris, it's baseball season. And in the past, you've like coached like three teams at once.
Mm-hmm.
This year, you're down to one team.
I'm down to one team.
How's that feel for you?
It's almost too many teams because I've got it for so long.
Is Tyler playing?
Yeah, Tyler's playing.
Are you coaching him?
Yeah, for the White Sox and the Majors B.
So, see, I always, this is, as a parent, I've always said, like, you cannot, like, give props enough to the parents that donate their time to be coaches and stuff. And Eric was, for years, donated his time as a softball coach. I would always fear being a coach because parents can be psychotic. Like, parents, it's not the kids so much, but the parents
are nuts.
Yeah, they are nuts. So, in your experience, like, what's tougher to deal with, the parents or the children?
I know the answer to that one. I mean, I coached high school for 12 years. I coached at the high school level and JV and varsity level. And the parents are always worse. I always taught the kids, you know, you got a problem, come talk to me. I don't want to hear it from mommy and daddy because I'm training. My job as a coach isn't just about teaching the game of baseball. It's about teaching, you know, the game of life, so to speak. You know, be man enough to come and tell me if you have an issue.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the 12, 13 years I did it, I only had a couple parental issues. So it wasn't a big deal for me because the school was involved. But then I'd go to the kid and be like, well, you heard my rule, come talk to me. I respect you more if you come talk to me. Mm. You know, and then with the little kids, this is my first year, and Tyler's 10. This is my first year being the head coach for Little League. I've only been a helper because I've been involved with high school for so long. And the parents now, I only had one complaint this year, so to speak, if you want to call it a complaint, and it's over with. It's been dealt with. It's not a big deal, but I'm who I am. Like, I coach. I've been coaching for a while now since I've been, 20 years old. I'm 37 now, so I've been coaching for about 17
years. Almost two decades, brother. That's not a while. That's professional.
How do you handle, like, when a parent, like, wants, like, more playing time for their kid?
That's exactly what happened to me. I had a parent send me a text, and this parent is a great person. And I was just kind of like, you know, they gave me the text, why isn't so-and-so playing this much? And, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I just took a deep breath and I just responded. You know, nowadays with text and everything, it's a lot different.
Right.
You can kind of cough off and just send a text. And I just said, well, you know what?
Your kid
sucks.
This
is the truth. You know, we had practice. We had 3 weeks of practices and this kid just isn't ready. He's a young kid. I have a very young team this year. And he's a young kid. And he's not ready to play infield. He's not ready to play, you know, you have to play each kid 3 innings. And I've been playing three innings. She said 2 innings. And I said, no, that's incorrect. I've been playing everybody 3 innings. And I said, you know, I've been working with the kids every practice, trying to get better to get them to that point. And then I said, I normally don't discuss playing time with parents, but I'm doing the best I can. And that's how I left it.
Well played.
Nice, right?
And well then played. The father came over and said to me, I apologize.
Oh, nice.
For my wife sending me a test because my son's not ready yet. And I said, I really appreciate that because I love these kids. They're great kids. I want to help them. I don't want to put them in a precarious position. I don't want to put them at first base when he gets beamed off the head.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm looking out for the best. I've been doing this a long time. I'm looking out for the best interest of your kid. I'm not trying to, like...
You're confident you know you're doing the right thing. So.
Right. You know, it's a tough thing, and as a parent, I get that. If I wasn't coaching Tyler, and I was sitting on the sidelines, and someone was putting Tyler where he wouldn't be, I'd have a hard time shutting my mouth. I guess I mean, I'm a coach, so you're harder special. For me. But I understand where the parents are coming from. They're just looking out for the best interest of their kids. But then, for instance, we put that kid at third base, and he comes in, he says, yeah, take me out of the infield. Right. So there's my, right there, the kid knows. He knows he's not ready. You know?
Eric, when you coach softball in Rockport, was it the same type of deal? Or?
Well, I'm coaching again. I got redrafted.
High retirement?
Yeah, I retired.
You got a new contract.
I retired for. Yeah.
So now I'm an extension there.
Yeah.
I coached all the way up at 18A tournament ball, state tournaments, played against California and New York. Normally we.
But what were the biggest struggles?
Well, it depends. Like right now, I'm with third and fourth graders again. You know, I did actually just change Lou McGrath's mind on. He wanted to have third and fourth graders playing, you know, regular softball, all the walks, you know, with a 6-run rule limit. So I finally got in touch with him yesterday, and you know, Lou and I have known each other for a long time. I have a lot of respect for him. He obviously has a lot of respect for me because he changed the way that we play softball at third and fourth after a 5-minute conversation, which is if a girl walks, we put the ball in the tee, and then she gets to hit it.
You know, and what was happening is that, you know, he moved the mound back to 35 feet, and if you've got a third grader pitching, 35 feet's a long, it's a long way, you know. Yeah, and I mean, not that some of the kids can't. And you know, me and my coaching staff are pretty busy, and we do the best we can. There are other coaches in the league, like the Vikings coach yesterday, that spent a ton of time with his team, and you could tell. And he had some pitches that didn't walk many players. You know, and they may have gone to Lou's clinics, and you know.
Yeah, but Lou does a great job.
To make the line a bit short, we changed the way the third and fourth, you know, is done. You know, my outlook is to it as I go. I try to spend an hour with them before the game. You know, we have a mix of fun and constructive, you know, stuff. Try to keep it fun so they don't quit.
Let's get better. Let's have fun.
Yeah. You know, if I lost every game of the season, I couldn't care less. You know, I used to be a wicked hothead, you know, once it got to like 5th and 6th and 7th and 8th and then into high school and tournament ball and stuff like that. I'll probably get back there when I get to tournament ball again. But at the 3rd and 4th grade level, anybody who's really getting upset over this should probably recheck their
Eric makes a great point. I'm a competitive person. And, you know, Tyler's like, Dad, we're going to win the World Series. And I was like, yeah, you know. Then I got my team. It's a great group of kids.
You know,
they're young. You know, we're the Bad News Bears, but we're a great group of kids. A
lot of hot.
It's a great group of kids. And every game, we're, 3-7, 3-8. But every game, you're seeing the improvement for each kid.
That's a beautiful thing.
And that's
thing,
what
man.
It's all about. And man. It's really, like, you know, I got two great fathers helping me out and everything. And we get frustrated. It's just natural. You know, but then...
But the kids,
you know,
come up, man. I remember that dude, slightly off topic, but growing up as a soccer player, emphatic, you know, since like age of 8 to like 25. But where I grew up in Virginia, from the age of 8 to in my 20s, we lived in a place called Craddock, or Craddock, as we say.
Craddock.
Craddock. We lived in the dock crowd. So we started a soccer program when we were young kids, and we knew we were the scrubs. I mean, we're talking T-shirts with iron-on logos and stuff.
We knew
we were
bring
the scrubs.
Bring your logo home and iron it on.
And dude, my first couple of years, like whether it was the, you know, the four divisions, you know, from the ages 8 to late teens, we all sucked, and we were last place, all of us, and we didn't have any jerk coaches. We had guys that, like you guys, that were passionate about it, wanted to have fun. 4 years into it, we were winning everything. Oh, like right. They stuck with us, and yeah, we stuck right. with them, nice. And like we just like you said, we learned, we played better teams, we got better. And back then, I don't remember any crazy parents. By the way,
It's more recent than
you know what those are.
But it's all sports now is so instant, and the whole world has changed. But
nowadays, like they don't just have like little league, and they don't just have pee wee football. There's like camps,
yeah, elite,
and they're
camps.
Like psycho camps. They're like where the kids
$1,000.
These like eight-year-old kids are traveling to Connecticut. To
yes,
this. I'm like
it is. Training like it's the World Series.
Yes,
yeah. What happened? Well, we just like used to play with our buddies.
I mean, I guess if you have the money, I can get what you're doing. I mean, you know, there's all these.
They want to raise Tiger Woods.
What do you call AAU programs or whatever you want to call them?
Want to raise superstars. We just wanted to play sports.
You spend $3,000 to play baseball to go.
Do those kids end up like getting better?
That's my question, I guess. I mean, I guess what's the percentages of
the kid?
1%
making,
1%.
Right.
Or less.
I mean, and maybe
it's less than that. I mean, to make it to the pros.
Like my son's a good athlete, and you know, I have a choice: do I send my son to baseball? Do I send my son to a good school? I decided to send my son to a private school. That was just my choice. If I had the money, would I send him to that? I don't know, because then I'm looking at, he's like, yeah, I'm going to play for the Patriots. I'm going to do this. And I'm like, that's great, Tyler. But then if he plays D3 football or baseball, I'll be psyched for him. Because that experience. I played D3 baseball, and I only played at Salem State, but I thought I went to Florida State. Like, because I was a part of that team for 4 years. We had a ball. We went to Florida for spring break. You know, we did. I felt like I was away. And I want Tyler to experience that. I don't care if it's at D3, D2, D1. Have that fun.
Yeah, for all the parents out there, you know, 1 out of 10,000 of your kids may ride the bench.
That's the whole thing. And then you think about
the
soap, how much ball they're playing year round. We have to only play, you know what I mean? It's just like the percentage. The only person in Gloucester that even came close, other than like Mike Cusimano for football, but then you got Rusty Tucker, who was throwing 90-something miles an hour as a senior in high school. And Rusty made it to the Red Sox, the Padres, minor league system, and that's the closest.
Yeah, it's very, very rare.
It's very, well, very
Muniz. Rare.
Don't take the joy out of it.
Muniz got drafted by the Bruins. Matt Muniz.
I don't remember that, really?
Yeah, he's
the all-time leading goal scorer for Holy Cross.
Oh, wow. Yes, nice. I know. I remember. Now I know
and
you're talking about.
And then me and Matt coached together and against each other in softball because our daughter's the same age. And he went to play down in the Carolinas. And, you know, they literally put the goons on him. You know? So Matty was kind of a skinny, you know, lanky, pretty fast guy. I mean, the guy can play golf and he's a great athlete. You know, but when they find out that you're a goal scorer and they put the goons on you, you know, because it's a different game. Now he's a vice president for Gordon's.
Yeah.
You know, but he was the hometown kid.
Oh,
drafted by the Bruins.
I know
you're
talking about it. Yep. Now I know.
I'll speak for the two coaches and saying, get your kids in sports because they make better students.
Yeah. That's the whole thing. You're well rounded because you're able to handle.
You make a better student. You perform better in school because you perform on the field.
So I was at Market.
Excuse me, Joe. I got one more thing.
Oh, go ahead.
All right, Rockport. When we first all started coaching softball and stuff like that, and we had a real good team on our board of directors, we sent every one of our coaches to a coaches camp.
Yeah.
Right. So the coaches camp, you know, went through drills and ways to have fun and prioritize a coach's schedule, like how to run a 14 player, you know, practice by yourself, you know. So like instead of having the coach pitching to one girl and 13 kids standing around, it gave you different options.
Yeah.
Right. So that was great. But at the end of it, you know, and this is what parents and coaches and everybody's involved with you know, youth sports under the high school level have to understand. They live by one motto, that it's all about the ice cream.
Nice.
All the kids care about is the fact that they're going to get a chocolate chip and a sugar cone.
At the end of the day,
they lose, win, play, don't play, they don't care.
It's right. A pizza party, baby.
Just keep it in perspective.
We're all about guys.
That's a great perspective.
Keep it in perspective. Right. So I went today to get the steaks for us because we had our man mail. And so I'm checking out. And I look, and I'm looking ahead of me, and I'm looking behind me, and I'm looking at my car, and I'm looking at other people's cars. Now, is this something that you guys judge? Like,
absolutely.
Do you totally judge the people by what they have in their car? Like if they have Doritos and hot dogs and
Kool-Aid
and regular Coca Cola, not even Diet Coca Cola, and like nothing of nutritional value at all, everything prepackaged foods. Do you look at them, whether it's right or wrong, and say, Jesus, what a piece of shit that
is. Yeah, you know what?
Everyone does.
I guess we do.
Do you check out their bodies, too? Like,
most of the time.
I'm not saying, you know, I get what you're saying 100%. And
Do you judge, though, mentally?
I think mentally we do judge it. We don't realize we're judging it. You're looking at it.
Are you paranoid? Okay, so the next question is, are you paranoid yourself? Like, oh, did I put too many things in my cart that can be perceived as...
I am, without a doubt. I mean, because, you know, you guys know, like, I work out at CrossFit, and I'm a coach there, so if I'm, like, got all this crap in my cart, and I go to the thing, I'm like, crap,
I'm just going to see
all this crap in here, and I'm like, you know, so I guess I am a little bit, on one retrospect, but at the other side, it's like...
So you got, like, sunflower seeds, prunes, you know...
No, I don't have prunes. Do I have prunes?
So, pink sheets and prunes.
Do you do it, Eric? Do you grocery store judge?
Do you shopping cart judge?
I actually never thought about it until you mentioned it to me earlier, and I have.
Yeah, I think
I have. I remembered. Oh, well, first
what
of all,
a mess that person is.
First of all, I was walking through. I guess you can't call it the ghetto Shaws, but...
Yeah, it's the ghetto Shaws. It's the ghetto Shaws. Right. You can't call it the ghetto Shaws.
It's the downtown Shaws.
Joey Schumatauer did not say that.
It's the downtown Shaws versus the uptown Shaws. Okay?
I've got my ass handed to me that on the
Beverly
block.
Beverly Hills Shaws.
Oh, there we go.
So anyways, ghetto Shaws.
Right,
so
that's my opinion.
So I'm going through the Shaws on Railroad Ave.
Where the police was chasing someone, by the way.
And this lady is unwrapping Kraft singles and stuffing them down her face. Right
in her face
in the car,
yeah. Just walking around, just like she's got a
wearing out a
singles,
a pack of cheese.
What did you think of something like grapes or like, not like cheese. Anything? It doesn't even have to be healthy, but Kraft singles.
You know, one, you know. So I happen to show up after her, right?
She's got a giant clutter of Kraft single wrappers. She must have eaten 10 to 15 slices. I'm not even kidding. And all the wrappers are like in like the where the bread is or whatever. So she has to like put that on the. I mean, she's been eating it, right? She has to put that like
the half wrapper,
like to the side, the half wrapper thing, to like start unloading her cot. And I did notice, you know. I mean, she had like, whew, man, she was wearing out Hostess, Twinkies,
double dogs, dogs. Yeah. Do they make double dogs anymore? Yeah, I haven't seen double dogs in forever.
Oh, she had chocolate milk. You know, I mean, she was, you know.
So, like, now inverse of that, have you ever felt subconscious about what you have in your cart when you're going up?
I buy tampons for my ladies.
See, I couldn't do that.
I don't have a problem with that either. I do.
I've done the same thing. I've looked at other people's carts, and yes, like, you know, you asked, or Chris asked, do you look at them too? Yes, I do. And but actually, what I have noticed is, it'll be a fan like a family or a mother and a kid or a father and a kid, and then I judge horribly. I'll look at their cart and see, you know, the 42 pack of the, you know, the juice boxes and the cereal and the and all this stuff, and then, you know, I'm like, oh man, you know, I think about the amount of, you know, grams of sugar that are in that cart, and then I look at me in my cart and I'm like, well, you're probably not. You know, shouldn't be one really judge in there either. I'm like, God, I hope I have something green in my cart right now. You know, like, please, like, just
reach for
some scallions or something. You know, something useless. But no, I only noticed that in, like, the past like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah,
I really noticed it. But then you see like these carts that are like Walmart jammed with like phenomenal amounts of, you know, prepackaged
and you
processed.
Wonder, who crap. Comes up with the money of that?
You know, it's like corn dogs. Like a rolling diabetes poster going down aisle 7, down the chip aisle between the sodas and the chips, and you're like, yo, man, you know, there's a reason why 70% of our kids are gonna be obese.
Back
now.
Off.
Yeah. You know, it's like lay off the soda or something.
The soda's, you know, kind of the thing that bothers me. When,
yeah,
I see
all the soda
in there, and I'm like,
I think there should be, there's like a quota where you're like, you, there's a tipping point where you go from, oh, you know, there's a few snacks in my cart too. I'm a pig.
There's a fine line.
The worst part is when you're on the run, though. Like, if you're like, oh, we need, you know, oh crap, forgot to pick up, you know, we need tortilla chips. Let's grab some soda and like a few things for a cookout. And then I find myself in a line with what looks like, you know, a suicide mission.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah,
everyone should pick like their like number one item that would make you like look twice at someone.
Oh my god, cheese
double
balls.
Dogs.
You know what they should do?
Was it
cheese balls?
Cheese balls.
I see, you remember the
big
tub
blue?
Of cheese balls?
Yeah, the tub of cheese balls.
It's a keg.
The worst thing I'll ever see in somebody.
The keg is a keg of cheese
balls. Absolutely, a tub of cheese balls. That's awful.
Cheese whiz.
I got an idea.
Oh, cheese whiz.
I got an idea, Joey. We'll start it here in Gloucester. Create a few specialty shopping carts that are split in four. Green section for vegetables. Red section for meat and whatnot. Split a shopping cart into four, and then you'll find out how much you're filling each of those sections.
Right. Oh my god!
Like that.
Great idea.
So you got your dairy and your milk and whatever. You can look down at your cart and go, "Oh, well, those cheese whiz balls aren't supposed to be in the vegetable side of the cart, but I ran out of room in the snack corner, so I'm gonna have to put those back."
Half those people throw that lettuce shit in the trash on the way out, but they'll look good.
But
at
true,
the cash
they look
out.
Good. Exactly. Yeah. Tell you what, if that was mandatory, carts would look a lot different.
I'm sorry. You know, the worst thing I've ever seen at Market Basket is one time I went in there and they had blue cotton candy balls.
I've seen it.
In the top.
And they would be right by the checkout.
Right in the beginning, right by the checkout thing. And I said, that is the most disgusting thing I've ever seen.
Literally diabetes.
I sent a picture to the chive and said, nope, because that's just not going to happen. You don't buy cotton candy blue cheese balls.
Stop and Shop at kegs of cheese balls the other day.
Really?
Yeah, like big giant thing, like $5.
Blue cheese balls.
Hey, let's talk about one positive thing about shopping carts. I was at the New Hampshire liquor store the other day. And some, you know, whatever, 60-year-old dude was there. The dude spent, I think it was $386 or whatever. And I was checking out his collection of, like, wines and liquor that he had. That was an impressive cart.
That's impressive.
So I looked at it on the total other way. I was like, dude,
you do that
you know, this guy spent, like, $400. But you know what?
That's I think you did pretty good. I think you did all right. I did a liquor store too.
I could have just said double that and put my credit card on. That would have been fine.
God bless him.
Sir, I'll give you $500 for your cart right now.
Anyway. So where do we all fall on the dad? Do you think that... Okay. This started out an article on one, like, women's newspaper. Okay, like, you know,
magazine. The dad
Cosmo.
The dad
it was like Cosmo dad or thing. Okay, we're talking about dad bod. But, like, it started out, the premise was on one of these, like, glamorous, you know, glossy women's magazines was the young women of today are more attracted to men that have, like, a beer gut and man tits because that, like, that kind of shows that they've been kind of like off the scene and like just, you know,
having a good time
yeah, eating with their family life. And you know they're more family men because they're not
self-centered.
They're not trying to look like, you know, a narcissistic perfect guy.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm comfortable in my
skin. The opposite of the situation.
the complete opposite. So but do you think that they were just trolling in this article to make it a big topic? Because it's so controversial.
It is, yes.
And it's kind of ridiculous. It's a ridiculous premise to think that a woman would be more attracted to a dude like that than a dude that's, like, jacked up.
Well, a dad bod brings so much more to the picture because it's not just about he's raising your kids, he's helping you raise your kids, he's doing that. So I think that's why women are attracted to that dad bod thing. They don't want the guy that's...
I get it, but I don't think it's true though. I think the premise is a handful of women that believe that, but I think
there's a truth in it. But I think that it's in other words, it's like
you take 100 women. How many people are going to take? Legitimately, how many women are going to take the bod
and you give them 5 things, body being one, humor, money, family. You can put 4 other things up to it.
That was
the body.
They were just talking dog bod, though. They just said dog bod. They didn't talk about all these other
things. They're not talking about everything that goes with
it. But no, they're assuming these other things with it. Because I've seen some of these polls. Now, speaking from someone who, not being a father, who has a professional dad bod, I would call myself as, to say that Eric's rubbing, that's iron.
Not the wrong.
You know what?
Good.
I learned this from a guy a long time ago. You know what? It's paid for.
Yep.
I think that there's some truth to it, but I think there's always been a truth to it. It's just one of those things, like something that gets a lot of exposure, like, oh no, cops are beating everyone to death. It's like, oh no, somebody just finally caught it on their phone.
Yeah.
It's nothing, you know. So I think there's some truth to it that, you know, that everything's in a cycle. So maybe the absolute ripped up, steroided up, orange tan, spiked haired guy, you know, for the most part, 90% of chicks don't really want that guy.
That's true.
And now, for the argument, Chris over here, he was in impeccable shape. Chris has like 4 extra pounds on him. And he said earlier that he thought he had a dad bod.
He wasn't even running you, potato.
No, you do not.
Chris,
you do not
have a dad bod. So he made steak and potato.
I didn't want to eat potato.
And Chris the Wolf, first he says, no, I'm not
going to have a potato.
Chris is in impeccable shape.
Is he
going to
be a shit from his CrossFit buddies? Is the cult going to come down?
No, come on, no.
The cult.
He ate 2 potatoes. I'm going to rat you out. But what I'll tell you, Joey, is that the dad bod definitely is slightly more popular now than ever, simply because I think more Hollywood stars are having success, like Jack Black.
Yeah.
You know, but other guys are having more success at being a regular guy, not having to be a superhero, ripped up kind of actor, you know, to be successful. So there's definitely truth in it. I just think that it's always been there. It's just now it's become more popular. There's more superstars that aren't ripped up in the gym, you know, that are being successful.
It's more real. It's more realistic than the everyday
life. Well, just like supermodels. Like, you know, as far as I know, exactly. I mean, none of us are married to Giselle but Tom. So, you know what I mean? Like...
Wait a second.
It's the same
thing. I honestly believe that Kate is way sexier than Giselle.
Okay, well, good save.
Well, you want to talk about...
No, I think that's true. I think Giselle... I don't like stick
that's
figures.
Fine.
I don't like stick figures.
I don't like Giselle. I like the one Bridget Moynihan that he was with before Giselle.
Yeah, Bridget Moynihan.
I like her 10 times better than Giselle.
Back to my sexy body.
Oh, yeah, let's don't forget about your body. I'm sorry.
But nice save. Anyways, I think there's, you can find a fat, chubby, white fucking guy superstar almost in every damn movie that's a comedy now.
Oh yeah,
it's just the way it is. You know,
yeah.
It's
what's that Noah? Oh God, yeah.
I mean, it's just they become more. It's just a thing. I think girls have been into it no matter what. You know, chicks like guys that are in shape, but most of them really don't give a shit, to be honest with you.
But let me ask you this. How come it's okay for women to come out and say about dad bod? But if we said
a
mom bod, it'd be a freaking outrage. Shit. Feminist Alicia Cox over here shitting on all of us. Saying, talking about mom bods and all that. Like, what are you talking about?
You'd be sleeping in a tent.
Right, if I said something like that, or any of us guys talk about mom bods.
To next podcast, when we discuss mom bods.
Mom bods, we'd be in the dog.
I interviewed my 20-year-old because I didn't have any sort of...
point of reference?
No. I'd never actually heard about dad bod until the other day, like Friday. Craig was outside. He just had 3 sausages.
Looking sexy.
Who the hell knows how many beers, rubbing on himself.
Saying, rubbing sausages on myself.
No, just your hands going, oh man, wow, what a dad bod. Check that out. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
The visual, I'm going to throw up at
it. No idea. So I interviewed my 20-year-old, and she said, well...
He is sexy, she said. I'll just say that right now.
The juice guys, like the real giant steroid guys or whatever.
Not attractive.
Juice
guys. Scary.
Right.
Yeah. She says literally scary. Yeah.
Can't handle those guys.
Right. And then, you know, I mean, say that's like, you know, the way upper end of the scale. And then she goes, no. Could never be attracted to one of those guys. I mean, there's room for bodybuilders, but that's not her. Next, she said down to where the guy's like always going to the gym. You know, always going to the gym, like shaves all his hair, you know, not gorilla juice.
A lot of selfies.
But under that, you know, no, but you don't shave.
You don't fall into the fanatic, man.
He said, she goes, nope, still not into that. She goes to the next guy, you know, who like plays softball, plays baseball, goes to the gym a couple days a week, you know, has some decent abs.
Pounds beers with the boys.
Yeah,
still.
Drinks beer, but still does sit-ups and push-ups every day and maintains a good shape. She was like, that for me is the best.
That's a great analogy. Because she was like,
you got a real person. Right. You know, they got balance. You know, and she goes, you know, what women, you know, young women, and she's 20, are looking for. Are guys that have balance. Some guy that can be funny. Some guy that can hang out with his friends. Someone that can hang out with her.
They say that though, but when it comes down to it, they want a little bit of a challenge, no?
I don't know
what a challenge has to do with that.
Dude, the challenge is our side. They don't never have a challenge. I mean,
they want a challenge. They don't want you to just like be all over them.
Sitting here with you all,
they want a challenge, man.
Yeah.
Right. You're all challenged in your own way.
Yes, dad bods are in. Face it.
Do you know what?
What about dad butts?
That gets a little creepy.
That part of the dad bod.
Why don't we have a poll? That would be. Post a couple bod.
Let's do it. Let's do the dad like bod photos.
Hey, we should invite a bunch of people down to the dock. Invite a bunch of people to the dock for hot dogs
and burgers
and do like 20. Let's 20 have dad, 20,
a dad
20,
bod
20
fashion
dad
show.
Bods.
We all wear a bag on our heads.
I love that. I love it.
We all wear a bag on
dad
our heads.
Just from the head down.
Analysis.
It's cut the head.
I like that idea.
You know what? I don't like the way you're objectifying my body.
Yeah.
Are you feeling? Are you upset?
I'm a meninist.
I'm offended.
Meninist.
I'm a meninist.
The problem with Craig.
A meninist. That's a great word.
Craig's cleavage sweats when he gets up sweats.
It does. It does. And Eric's always reaching over and drying it for me with his little napkin in his pocket.
My serviette.
It's kind of sexy.
As Toby would say.
You guys are bananas. Well, I think we wrapped it up. We're going to have a few more adult beverages before we call it a night. Thanks for coming. Krista Wolf, Enrico Palazzo, Eric Lorden from Passports, and my boy Craig Kimberly on the scene today.
On the scene.
Chasing it down.
Let's toast it up, fellas.
Carlton G5.
Cheers to the man cast.
Why are you always all on my back? like a bitch when I'm with you.